Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host today, Pat Schlarbaum. Today, we will be discussing bird migration at Ada Hayden Park with Tyler Harms. Tyler is president of the Iowa Wildlife Society, an organization of natural resource professionals. And in the second half of Local Talk, we will be visiting with Amy Yoakum, Natural Resource Manager for the Story County Conservation Board. Amy will tell us about an exciting project at Dakins Lake near Zering in northeast Story County. Let's check out a fantastic place to visit, Ada Hayden Park.
Welcome to Local Talk, Tyler Harms.
Good morning, Pat.
It's a beautiful morning.
Yes, it is.
You can all appreciate we're out here at Ada Hayden. We're in one of the natural areas of Story County. What brought you to Story County initially?
Iowa State University, actually. Mm-hmm. I came here in 2006 for an undergraduate degree in animal ecology and stuck around for a master's degree in wildlife, and then left for a brief time, but came back and am now working at the university. So.
You working here in Ames now?
I am, yeah. I work at Iowa State University as an assistant scientist on the National Resources Inventory Project. It's a project that's administered by the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and we look at changes in land use across the entire nation over time, and the project's been ongoing since, the early stages of the project's probably since the 1950s or 60s, so...
So it's a long-term database.
Absolutely.
On landscape practices.
Yeah.
Farming, agriculture, forestry.
Development, yeah, urban development.
Nomination.
Natural resources, the whole works.
And growing up, was there interest in conservation? And
yeah. Ever since I was a kid, I've always had an interest in conservation. Grew up in north central Iowa, right adjacent to Union Slough National Wildlife Refuge.
So. Oh, up in Kossuth County.
Indeed, yeah.
Northwest Iowa.
Always interested in the outdoors, and there's a group of trumpeter swans here flying over the lake as we sit here and chat.
Yeah, that kind of makes it work, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Boy, they all look pretty white. I don't see many gray ones in there.
Yeah.
Maybe the ones out front were the gray ones.
Yeah,
the gray
like
being the immatures.
Family group, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Nice flyover.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and there are trumpeter swans up in Kossuth County now.
There are.
Long time absent from Iowa.
That's right.
I think 1883 mm-hmm. I think was the last sighting of trumpeter swans, and now they are recovering. They are rejuvenating. You live here in Ames?
We do. Yep.
Do you have a backyard?
I do have a backyard. A small one, but it's there.
Is there any bird feeding activity?
Oh, absolutely. We've got two bird feeding poles up in our backyard. We have a bird bath in the backyard.
Oh, you do provide water.
We do indeed, yeah.
I like to suggest to people that if you got the water, you'll have the birds in the neighborhood. They all gravitate towards the water this time of year.
Absolutely, especially now that we've experienced this cold snap and things, natural water sources are freezing up very quickly. It's important that we provide water if we can in our backyard.
Essential component with the food and cover.
Yep.
What kind of bird feeders do you like to set out?
Oh, I like to set out a diversity of different feeder types, mostly tube feeders, so the long cylindrical feeders that are, common of bird feeders. I do also have a couple trays. I find that the northern cardinals and mourning doves like the tray feeders, and the mourning doves actually will just sit in my trays for hours and pick away at the safflower seed and things like that. So.
Okay, so you feed safflower in the trays, and that's the Niger seed in those tubes.
Niger or black oil sunflower, yeah.
Okay. And you like the black oil sunflower?
I do, and it seems the birds do too, at least in my yard.
I think it appeals to the most wide range of desirable birds in people's backyards. You mentioned the cardinals. What's your favorite bird in that backyard bird feeding?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a tough one. I guess I've always been a fan of brown creepers, and I had the unique opportunity of seeing a brown creeper crawling up my pin oak in my backyard just a few weeks ago, and so I think that was probably my most recent favorite.
Well, can you describe that bird, brown creeper?
Oh, well, that's exactly how the name implies. It's a tiny little brown bird that crawls up, kind of like a woodpecker, similar to a woodpecker, crawls up the trunk of a tree, picking away at the bark for insects and other goodies.
I've watched them, they'll go up 7 or 8 feet and then drop down to the base of another tree.
Yep.
And then go up that trunk. It was kind of up and then back down and up and back down, creeping along.
Exactly. I might also mention, Pat, that another one of my favorite bird feeders in my backyard is actually the ground itself is a really good feeding substrate for birds that we see this time of year. Sparrows, like, you know, white-throated sparrows, white-crowned sparrows, dark-eyed juncos, if you get those in your backyard. Oftentimes, those birds will actually feed on the ground and not on a bird feeder itself. And so a lot of the times what I'll do is I'll take some cracked corn or some millet or even some sunflower seed and sprinkle it out on the ground or underneath my bird feeder poles, and that really attracts those ground feeding birds.
And the ground feeding birds, I guess you've got cardinals and mourning doves you mentioned, the juncos. What were the other two? The sparrows?
Yep, sparrows, white-throated and white-crowned sparrows. Those are going to be a little less common than the juncos in the backyard, but it's definitely possible to still see those species in our backyards this time.
So we're kind of encouraging people to get a bird book and check these birds out, because they're really quite, those are the nice sparrows. Sometimes people confuse the English house sparrow that are non-native.
Right.
Kind of as trashy birds, but yep. There are good sparrows.
Absolutely, lots of good sparrows.
Beyond your backyard, do you have a destination where you like to go birding?
Oh man, you know, the nice thing about birding is you can do it just about anywhere you go. You know, you can see birds in downtown Ames, chimney swifts. You can see a good diversity of birds out here at Ada Hayden Park. You know, when I think about just Ames and Story County, some nice local birding spots, Ada Hayden Park is definitely a top destination for that. But there are a number of parks within the city limits of Ames, such as Ada Hayden, that can really provide good birding experiences. Another one is Emma McCarthy Park.
Okay.
That's a very good birding
spot.
Kind
of west of the campus.
Yes, west of the campus. I often will walk through Pamel Woods right there on campus during my lunch hour. Another very good birding spot. Actually, I had a lot of nice birds there last spring.
What were some of those?
You know, I think the biggest surprise to me was a hooded warbler at Pamel Woods last spring during spring migration. They're a bird that is not uncommon during migration, but they're not common by any means either. And they're more of a shrubby species. When we think about warblers, we think about birds bouncing around high in the treetops. And actually, the hooded warbler prefers to be a little bit lower, kind of in the underbrush.
So you can enjoy birding wherever you go.
Absolutely.
The hooded warbler is in kind of a guild of a lot of warblers. They're neotropical migrants, I think I've read, where they're here to nest and then back to the tropics.
That's right.
And just little guys, but boy, even like a hooded warbler is very distinctive with
yes.
that dark hood. People see that, and then they can kind
Bright
of go
yellow.
From there.
Yeah.
Well, and you're describing a diverse set of habitat types, I guess, when you mention Ada Hayden. There's some upland here, and it's that diversity of habitat types has a diversity of bird community. Birds.
That's absolutely correct.
Real good point. Enjoying the migration currently. We've got the changing season. You mentioned the warblers. They're all back in Central and South America pretty much now. But what are some of the birds? We see a lot of waterfowl. What are some of the waterfowl species for people to look for this time of year?
You know, this time of year, we start to see more mallards, which is a common duck that we see, you know, throughout the year in Iowa. But they also are a migratory species, and we see a big push of them this time of year, particularly as the temperatures start to get colder north of us.
Oh, those cold fronts.
Absolutely. Mallards are dabbling ducks, and so they're going to be typically found on marshes and shallow water habitats up north. And so as those habitats start to freeze up, as the weather gets cooler, it's just going to keep pushing them down and pushing them down. They're going to keep searching for open water as they migrate. A number of other migratory waterfowl species are passing through this time of year. Things like northern shovelers, green-winged teal, northern pintail, diving ducks such as scaup, lesser scaup, canvasback, redheads. We're still seeing a number of those ducks
around. I'm sure the listeners are going through their waterfowl books for identification. Let's kind of focus on the canvas backs.
Sure.
One that used to be very rich and rare. Mm-hmm. Their population seems to be improving.
It does, yes.
And what would you hold for the reasons for that improvement?
You know, I think we're starting to see a lot of increased management on big water bodies for food sources for canvasbacks.
Exactly.
And one example that comes to my mind is the Mississippi River here in Iowa, a big, big migration stopover area for canvasbacks and redheads, and for many diving duck species, for that matter.
Pool 9 up in Lansing, Iowa, just on the Mississippi River Refuge.
Yeah.
Great spot for a number of those ducks that you mentioned, but particularly the canvasbacks, redheads.
I was just there that last weekend, and these ducks are gonna feed on submergent vegetation this time of year, and by that I mean vegetation that's actually growing beneath the surface of the water. So they're diving ducks, so that they can dive down and get at the roots or the tubers of some of these submergent vegetation species or these submergent plants, and you know, managing for those plants and providing those plants to these ducks, I think is a huge help, not only during migration but also during the breeding season as well.
Yeah, I think that habitat northwest of here, up into Canada, duck production areas, duck nesting areas, but I think the dabblers that go after that shallow habitat, like the mallards go for they dabble, but these divers going down for the wild celery they've done a lot of management to improve the wild celery.
Absolutely.
That is a great tuber for those diving ducks. Well, what is it about right here in central Iowa, driving the gravel roads? I see some flocks, and those are winter birds. What describe some of those flocking birds that people can see in the gravel?
Sure. So the two species that come to mind right away are the Lapland longspur, snow bunting. Both birds that are, again, like we mentioned, northern birds. They come back and spend the winter in Iowa, and you explained it almost perfectly, Pat. They're flocking birds, and so we're gonna see them on the gravel roads, picking through the gravel, or on the shoulder of the paved roads, picking through the gravel as we're driving along. And even if you can't identify them, the behavior of those birds is almost the only identifying characteristic that you need, particularly for longspurs. If you flock a group of birds up off the side of the road and they get up in one big flock and they fly and they climb and they climb and they climb and they fly really high and they kind of circle around and wait for you to go by, and then they just drop right back down on the side of the road again.
Yeah.
That's a very typical behavior of that bird. And then also the snow bunting. And snow buntings, as the name implies, they're very white. And so when you flush those birds up off the side of the road, you'll see the white in the wings, which is it's very evident when they fly. And
those are pretty good field marks. You look for the white of the snow buntings, and the horned larks have actually some almost like little spurs or little horns.
Yeah, and you mentioned one other ones that I didn't think of, and that was the horned lark. And we do see those birds during the summer in Iowa as well, less common than we do in the wintertime. They do nest here infrequently, but yes, another winter bird is the horned lark, and they're going to be along the roadsides as well during winter.
You're on the gravel roads. You've got a lot of power lines.
Yeah.
What are some of those birds that you'll notice that have migrated to Iowa?
Yeah, so I think I might mention real quick, Pat, that, you know, you said migrated to Iowa, and I think a lot of the times folks think, well, migration, you know, these birds are leaving and they're going for warmer places, you know, and believe it or not, there are a lot of birds that will migrate to Iowa and spend the winter here in Iowa, you know, and deal with our cold weather and cold temperatures.
Yeah, and the northern climes, they're sharing their northern nesting areas with us in the wintertime.
That's right. So birds like...
So what are those?
Northern shrike is a really good one. You can see those birds along the power lines in the wintertime. They're kind of an open country bird, like a nice diverse habitat mix of open, like grassland-like habitats, but also like to have some shrubs and trees sporadically placed as well.
Now, what's their food preference?
They're actually a carnivorous bird, and so they're going to hunt for small mammals or even small birds. I'm sure most folks have probably heard of them as the butcher bird.
Oh.
And the reason for that is that they will actually capture prey and cache it for later, meaning that they'll store it. And the way that they do that is they'll stick it on a spine
or like on a locust tree.
Yeah. Exactly. The thorn of a locust tree. And so, you know, a gruesome behavior, but again, just very, very neat to see such a behavior.
Yeah, they're quite a little handsome bird. You know, maybe the size of a large blue jay.
Yeah, I would say so.
And kind of white and black.
Yep, have that nice real black mask.
The northern shrike.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio at 89.1 FM. Today we're talking about birds and bird migration with Tyler Harms, who works with the Natural Resource Conservation Service at Iowa State University.
So why do you like birding? What gets you out there?
It's a really neat way to appreciate nature, and you can do it anywhere. You know, I take a little walk on campus every day during my lunch hour, and I can look for birds on campus. And, you know, I think a lot of folks have this misconception that you know, in order to bird, you have to come to places like Ada Hayden or M. McCarthy Park or something like that. And although those places are very good places, you know, you can sit in your kitchen and drink a cup of coffee and watch the birds out your back window at your feeders or in your backyard, or, you know, you can walk around anywhere and see birds. And just such a great diversity of birds, so many different life histories that are very neat, lots of different behaviors that are just fascinating. You know, once you dive into the world of birds, it's really hard to climb back out.
I see a lot of your postings for the Iowa Ornithologist Union bird line. People can check that out, Iowa Ornithologist Union, www. Here come those trumpeter swans are kind of making a bank just south of here, coming back in.
Oh, they sure are.
Now, is your birding activities involve your family members?
Oftentimes they do, yeah. My son Graham has enjoyed going on birding adventures with me recently. He's 2 years old and just received a pair of binoculars for his birthday. He would very much enjoy seeing these trumpeter swans fly over right now. Just such a neat image, seeing those swans fly over the frozen lake with the sun at their backs.
Big white birds.
Big white birds indeed, but very, very beautiful birds.
It sounds like it's a family activity, friends birding activities through the Big Blue Stem Audubon.
Yeah, there's just a number of great organizations that one can get involved with. Birding organizations. Yeah, right here in Ames, we have the Big Blue Stem Audubon Society. We have, like you mentioned, Pat, the Iowa Ornithologist Union, which is a statewide organization of birders. And even for young folks now that are interested in birding, we have Iowa Young Birders. Carl Bendorf, the executive director, a good friend of mine, has done a very, very good job with getting that organization up and running in the last 2 or 3 years, and leads monthly birding trips around the state for young folks ages 8 to 18 and accompanying adults. So,
and accompanying adults, it's great. The kids have an interest in their parents.
Yeah, absolutely.
Coming along also.
And it's just really neat. I help out with young birders quite a bit, and it's just really, really neat to see, you know, see these parents that are just so interested in, you know, what their kids are interested in birding. And I mean, they'll drive their kids halfway across the state to go on these field trips, and just the really, really neat. Hard to explain, I guess.
Well, that gives you faith for the future.
Absolutely.
And I suppose sooner or later, each one of those young will see.
Couple mergansers right there just flew over the frozen lake. I couldn't identify which species, but you could tell by the long necks and the very long bill on those birds that they were
the mergansers. Bill really stood out on those mergansers.
Yeah,
they
absolutely
eat fish.
Yep.
For the listeners, and they so their bill is really quite extended. It's a pretty good tool for snatching at the fish. Yep. And
look like common mergansers, but I can't rule out red-breasted merganser either. So.
They move along a pretty good clip.
Yeah.
And, of course, you mentioned other birds coming to Iowa, the bald eagles. We have eagles here, but we sure receive a lot of those northern.
Yes, indeed we do, especially around the open water sources. It's just a really neat spectacle to see the the eagles congregated around.
Yeah, where like there's the moving water. River, yeah. Yeah, all the locks and dams are kind of designed perfectly for that. What are some of the others? What about the eruption birds?
Sure. So, there are these eruptive species that things like red-breasted nuthatches, white-winged and red crossbills, pine siskins to some degree are eruptive species.
And their population, or what's that term mean, eruptive?
Sure. So these birds are, they will migrate to follow food sources. So most of these birds, well, the crossbills, to use them as an example, are really tied to spruce cone crops. And so, or cone crops in general. And they're a northern bird. And so if we see really, really good cone crops up north, the birds will typically stick around up north. If we see relatively poor cone crops up north, the birds will erupt and try to kind of venture out and look for other food sources.
So it doesn't happen every year.
No.
Periodically in a decade, there might be.
Right.
Maybe just a couple times.
Right. And it definitely doesn't happen every year. Another really good example, one that we noticed just a few years ago here in Iowa, is the snowy owl, a very eruptive species. And actually, not just here in Iowa, but a huge snowy owl eruption across the nation just a few years ago. And again, they're highly tied to a food source, the lemming populations. And they're kind of the opposite. When we see really high lemming populations, we get this really high reproduction of young snowy owls, and then during the eruption, we see those young birds kind of venturing further south, or in the case of a few years ago, east or west, or wherever, looking for food because food is running low up north.
Yeah, or they have more than one young or two. They can have multiple young, and when there's a lemming population that is spiking upwards, then all the immatures survive, or all the young ones survive. And I understand that they'll launch themselves like 600 miles.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than just leapfrog down 100 miles at a time. When they hit Iowa, they've come a long way.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating, you know, during these major eruptions, where these birds can end up. I mean, there was a snowy owl that ended up in Hawaii a few years back. There was another snowy owl that was reported, and unfortunately, the bird was actually killed in Bermuda, believe it or not. So these birds can when they're looking for food, they can really move.
Yeah, they bring the life of the Northwoods to us periodically. Maybe not every winter, but as you mentioned, every now and then there can be vast numbers, and the birders really go for sharing that excitement of seeing snowy owls here in Iowa.
Absolutely.
What birds would you like to share that are most important to you?
Oh, man. I suppose I can't say all the birds are important to me, can I?
Yeah, you can.
You know, that
it's like a parent trying to determine which of their offspring are prefer, so it's a loaded question.
Right. You know, I really enjoy all birds, and of course, you know, the first ones that come to mind that are, you know, in terms of importance are those birds of conservation concern. You know, the ones that we know are declining, or, you know, we're destroying their habitat or something like that. But
so the grassland birds?
Yeah, grassland birds.
Here in Iowa, we don't have the prairie like we once did. So.
No, we don't. And you know, they're definitely one group of birds that are, you know, they're suffering from that loss of prairie.
They're our greatest conservation need.
Almost every species in Iowa is a species of greatest conservation need, meaning that they're, we need to focus our habitat management and restoration efforts here in Iowa on grasslands for those species. Very, very important things like henslow sparrows, dick thistles, and meadowlarks. But
okay, those are three. Let's say those one more time, please.
Henslow sparrow, grasshopper sparrow is another one, dick thistle, eastern meadowlark, bobolink is another one, cedron, a suite of species that really benefit from those grassland habitats. I think it's also worth mentioning, though, Pat, that you know, we can't forget about those common birds. You know, things like the chickadees and you know, the cardinals that we see in our backyards. I think it's you know, it's also very important to, although they may seem abundant now and we can, you know, we can enjoy them about anywhere, important to keep those critters in mind as well, because we want to try to keep them common.
We just want to keep what we have.
That's right.
So we've had a group of six trumpeter swans, then a group of four. Now we have three.
Oh, yes.
How about that? Big long necks.
Really a great time of year to see trumpeter swans.
Yeah, I've heard some birders explain that last hour of darkness and the first hour of dawn, those 2 hours are the most important time of day. And boy, sure been good for seeing trumpeter swans here at Ada Hayden this morning. Very uplifting.
Yes, it sure is. One of my most memorable moments as a birder and a wildlife biologist was when I was standing in a marsh up in north central Iowa conducting bird surveys, and I hear this, you know, this faint kind of, you can always hear a bird flapping, and it's just this really faint sound, and I turn around and here's this adult trumpeter swan, probably no more than 30 or 40 yards over, flying over my head, and just cruised right over, kind of took a peek down at me, and just kept on flying, and just really neat experience.
It's like a gorgeous B-52.
Bird. Oh gosh, they're huge.
Yeah, but you're describing some real special habitat bases. Our next guest is going to be talking about the new area. Have you been to Dakins?
I have been up to Dakins, yeah, just a really great area.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of, it's got a nice spotlight thanks to the Dakins family and to the Story County Conservation Board. So maybe we'll see you up at Dakins. Thanks so much for all you do for conservation.
Thank you for the opportunity to chat this morning, Pat.
Tyler Harms. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio at 89.1 FM. Today we've been talking about birds and bird migration with Tyler Harms, who works with the Natural Resource Inventory Project at Iowa State University. Welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Pat.
Yeah, and your position here with the Story County Conservation Board?
Mm-hmm. I'm the Natural Resource Specialist. So I do the hands-on land management for all of our county parks.
And how many parks does that encompass?
Well, it's about 3,200 acres, I think, in total.
Uh-huh.
In multiple different areas.
So you're a busy woman.
I'm a busy woman.
When did you start?
I've been with the county for about 16 years.
And where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Des Moines, but I really grew up running around the Sheraton River in southern Iowa. That's where I got my nature beginning, you would say.
In Lucas County?
In Lucas County, yep.
And did you attend Iowa State?
I did. I received my degree in fisheries and wildlife biology from Iowa State.
Well, today I would like to learn about a specific site, Dakins Lake, up near Ziering.
Yes, this has been a site, actually, that we've had the site for a long time. It was our very, very first Story County Park, and we've been quite busy up there the last few years.
When was it designated a park?
Well, we purchased the property in the late 70s.
I see.
But we started managing the area in the 60s.
Was it the Dakins family?
Yes. The Dakins family have been in the Ziering area for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I think around 1875, they moved to the area from Canada. And it's my understanding they really like the topography of the area for farming because it's a little bit more rolling there in Ziering and didn't seem to be quite as wet.
And for the listeners, it's in the far northeast corner.
Yes.
Of Story County. And there was an existing lake there?
Yes. The Dakins family actually built a small lake in the 1920s, and they produced ice for the town of Zeering.
Oh, so that was quite an industry back then.
Yeah, so they used the ice, and then that provided for the town the ice.
And then in the 60s and 70s,
yes.
Story County Conservation Board got involved.
Yes, there was actually a National Soil Conservation Field Day there in 1950, and President Truman came and spoke at that event. So there was quite a large crowd there to see that project that the Dakins family had in the lake there. There's been a lot of interest, especially in the old lake that the Dakins family started.
You've put together a new master plan?
Yes. So you may be familiar with all the wind turbines that are up in that area. It's quite windy up there.
Yeah.
And the county has been able to capture some of the funding from the wind turbines to help fund the lake project.
Okay.
They've created a TIF district for the wind turbine project.
TIF meaning?
Tax Increment Financing.
Uh-huh. So the citizens of Story County are benefiting from the tax revenues that the wind power energy is contributing.
We sure are.
Great. So there was a lake there, now you've expanded it?
Yes. The original lake was 5 acres, and it was built as basically a sediment pond to catch and keep the water clean, catching the sediment. And so we decided to leave that old existing pond as it is, so it can act as a sediment pond for the new lake that we've built.
So the existing lake was kind of modified to essentially keep the silt that's in the runoff from impacting your new lake.
Correct.
Okay.
So we've built a new 15-acre lake just on the south side of the old existing 5-acre lake.
And initially, how many acres did the Dakins area encompass for the original park?
The original park was 40 acres, which we purchased directly from the Dakins family. And then the expansion in the park, we've added 64 more acres. So we're a little over 100 acres now for that park. And that also came through the Dakins family as well.
So your role as the natural resource manager, is there a lot of planting?
Yes. We have constructed 3 new wetland cells in the new expanded park, and that will help clean the water before it hits the new lake. So we're planting the wetlands. We've planted, I think, around 40 acres of prairie as well.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those key wetland prairie species in those plantings?
Yeah, we have sedges, we have water plantain, we have monkey flower.
We'll have to look those up.
Yeah.
But they're monkey flower.
Yeah, there. Lots of sedges, and then just generally the plants that like to have their, what we call their feet or their roots wet.
Sure.
For a good part of the time.
Is there any upland in this new
yes.
area?
So there is some upland. So that's been, our seed mixes have covered the range of plant types, because we have the wetland cells, and then we have the dry uplands, and then we have some swales that are medium soil moisture. So a lot of diversity in our seed mixes there.
Yeah. So the new lake has been constructed? Does it have water?
The new lake, yes, has been constructed. It filled rather quickly. We were worried with 2 years of drought that it wasn't going to fill for a while, but it's full, and it's about 28 feet deep. It's been stocked with fish. We saw the fish grow about 4 to 5 inches this last summer.
I know there's always a lot of fish structure composition. Did you have things pre-construction for the fish?
Yes. We purposefully left some trees that we knew were going to be flooded in strategic places, left them standing, just cut the tops off. So there's some structure as far as trees that are under the water.
And those act as like a nursery? For the small fish.
Yes, giving them a place to hide. We also constructed what are called catfish hotels that are down at the bottom of the lake. We used large cement culvert type pipes that put down there. We made some structures out of pallets that we weighted down and put at the bottom. We created spawning beds, a little bench along the shoreline that the fish can use to spawn. So because it's a man-made lake, we need to work very hard to create artificial structures for the fish to use if we want to maintain the fisheries and actually have them be reproducing.
Exactly. Listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio 89.1 FM. We're talking with Amy Yoakum with the Story County Conservation Board about an exciting refurbishment of Dakin's Lake. It's quite a project near Ziering in northeast Story County. Sourced from?
Well, we use lots of different sources for our seed. We combine in our prairie plantings. It's all local ecotype, locally grown seed.
So it's the prairie plants that were here historically?
Yes.
Maybe from Doolittle? Was that one of
them? Doolittle, initially? Yes. Mm-hmm. We have some Doolittle seed in some of our plantings. So we use our combine run seed.
And that Doolittle Preserve, it has all the history of the prairie right here in Story County.
Yes.
Up by Story City.
As good as it gets here in the county. Yeah. We're fortunate at Dakin's to have received some grant money to be able to help us purchase some of that seed as well. It's quite expensive.
But it's worth every penny.
Worth every penny. Yes. Yes. We want our plantings to be as diverse as possible to support many different species living in them, whether it be our insects. I think we all know that our pollinators are not doing very well. Monarch butterflies. We want a diversity of birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians. So the more diverse of a prairie that we can plant, the greater diversity of life that it will support.
Have you completed your plantings in that project?
No, we will be planting some more yet this early in the spring. We'll do some more plantings. We're also working on a rain garden. We're not going to be using seed for the rain garden. We're going to actually be planting about 1,000 prairie plant plugs.
Now, where will that be located?
That will be, so the rain garden will be catching runoff that comes off of the new campground. And then the rain garden will filter that water before it then enters into the new lake.
So there'll be fishing and camping. This is, a great, great destination for people in Story County. For no other reason, just to go up and see it. Current project.
Yeah. So we added about 30 new campsites, and then we left the old campground there.
So what's the total?
So the total will be 40 campsites.
Okay.
Eventually we'll have cabins. The long-term plan is to build 3 cabins at the site, but that's a ways off yet.
So it's still a work in progress. Have you done any prairie burning?
So Dakin's Lake, actually around the old lake, has a relatively high-quality prairie remnant that's in need of a lot of love. It has a few issues with reed canary grass and some other invasive species.
And that's
species.
Kind of an invasive, wetland-loving reed canary grass.
Yeah,
it's kind of a hassle.
Unfortunately, it was actually planted in the park. You know, back in the day when we were planting multiflora rose and honeysuckle bushes, they were also planting reed canary grass for erosion control. Oh. And it really does its what it was set out to do, but it's quite difficult to get rid of. So we've been burning the remnant prairies up at Dakin's so that we can better control the reed canary.
So what are your control mechanisms that you like to resort to in fighting honeysuckle and reed canary grass?
Well, Pat, you know that probably my favorite control method are goats.
Goats?
Goats.
Wow. So who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Yeah, we've been actually grazing with goats for, I think, 5 years in Story County Parks. And we use the goats to help control woody vegetation, generally in prairies. So honeysuckle, olive, multiflora rose, even dogwood when it gets a little bit out of hand.
So those are all shrubs. Goats are primarily go after the shrubs, sounds like.
Well, goats will eat anything, pretty much. But they do like to eat the browse, the leaves of the woody, bushy-type plants. And they're actually healthier when they're eating that browse than they are if they're just eating grass. If they eat grass a lot, they can get a little bit wormy. And so then they need medical treatments to be dewormed.
Oh, so there's parasite issues with the grass.
Yeah.
Well, who would have known?
Yeah. They seem to be less wormy when they're eating the leaves off of the bushes.
And you have a budget to contract with a goat grower?
We work
goat
with...
Goat farmer?
Yeah. We work with a local family that raises meat goats. And they bring a small herd. It's usually only to about 10 goats to a couple of our parks. And they are eating exactly what we're trying to get rid of in the prairies.
How do they keep them in? How are they fenced?
We use electric fence. It's called electronet fencing. That has a solar charger. And the goats are raised with that type of fence on the farm. So when they come to our parks, they're fully aware of what will happen to them if they touch the fence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so they're kind of conditioned to honor that, honor the fence.
Most of them.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. I have them all summer, but we have to periodically move the fence as they eat through their enclosure. We're very careful to not overgraze.
Of course. You're using the goats as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
What's some of the other tools that you use to kind of get a handle on these invasive species?
We use fire in the appropriate places depending on the species.
Uh-huh.
Fire, especially in woodlands, is a wonderful way to keep multiflora rose under control. And certain things like honeysuckle, if you cut it, most likely it's going to resprout and come back. And you can use fire almost in any setting to try to kill the resprouted honeysuckle or olive or buckthorn bushes.
The shift has gone to what was here originally. Those are the shrubs and the prairie plants seems to be the management guidelines that you're honoring.
Yeah, we're trying to heal our natural areas. And since we did so much planting of those invasive species, it takes quite a while to get rid of them and then try to recreate a healthy system to the best of our ability.
So Dakin's being a topic of destination for the listeners, what would you like to see occur in your career?
I have lofty goals of restoring the prairie remnants that are on the north side of the old original park. And I say lofty because when it comes to invasive species, we've got just about all there is to have up there. It's quite a jungle. And it's going to take a really long, long time. But I have faith that once we remove the invasive species, that the prairie plant seeds are still in the ground and that they will come back.
Do you consider that your greatest challenge?
For me and my job personally, yes. I would say that is my biggest challenge at Dakin's Lake, yes.
Have you had any of those special moments, you know, where you kind of feeds that interest of returning it to what was there historically?
Yeah, we've cleared about an acre of invasives and it all resprouted, of course. And so last summer we brought in goats at Dakin's Lake to eat the resprouted honeysuckle and the buckthorn and the oriental bittersweet that are all alive and well up there. But I've seen wild licorice and pale spike lobelia, Indian grass, side oats, monarda. There are a lot of prairie plants still living up there along the edges that they still have a foothold. So.
Yeah, you love that tenacity.
Yeah.
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 So your vision is to see a Dakin's project with native plants. How many more years do you project that the goat will be necessary?
I think the goats at Dakin's would be helpful for many years to come. When the park, we had the goats there this summer because the park was closed for construction. And we're not sure how the goats would do with lots of people around, with the goats' safety being our concern. We had a naughty goat at Dakin's this summer and actually knocked down the fence, and all of the goats got out and ended up in the town of Ziering.
Oh, there was a rebel naughty
there
goat.
There was, yes, a ringleader.
Okay.
And very, very late one night after dark, we got a call that the goats had gotten out and actually managed to cross the highway.
Oh,
and okay. My director found the goats on the handicap ramp at the church. So then we decided the goats probably should go back home for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, yeah, that was your cue. Well, you're going to utilize a pretty unique habitat assistance that people are starting to hear more and more about.
Yes, they are a wonderful management tool in the right location.
And you've got a special fisheries planned and implemented. Water quality, I'm hoping, will improve with the sedimentary basin. And you're utilizing some TIF tax financing. What a great project.
Yeah, we should really give some thanks to all the partners that have been involved in this project. And the first people we should probably thank is the Dakin's family themselves for their openness for a long time to have conservation a part of their farm.
Are they living in the Ziering area still?
They've been actually very heavily involved in the planning for the new park.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been wonderful. Carol Williams, who's our special projects ranger, has been the project manager for this. And she's done an outstanding job of working with the contractors and the engineers and envisioning the park.
Carol is really an asset to the Story County Conservation Board.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The city of Ziering was very helpful to us. We were able to hook up to their sewer and water systems for the park. So that was really wonderful for us to be able to do. The Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation helped us with our land acquisition. A lot of people raised independent funds for the fish that are in the lake. Of course, we received several different kinds of grants. One from the Story County Community Foundation, which will pay for some playground equipment in the
fantastic.
New campground.
They're a great group.
Yeah. So, and this project would not have happened without all of these partners coming together to get this done.
Yeah. Is there anything else that?
Well, we hope to open sometime early next summer, 2015. We still have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of tree planting to do. We need to plant around 140 trees in the new campground. We're trying to break that up because our staff can only plant so many trees and take care of so many trees at one time.
Well, do you welcome volunteers?
We do welcome volunteers for the tree planting. When we go to plant the rain garden, like I mentioned, that'll be about 1,000 plants. So we need people to help us plant and then also maintain the rain garden and even help us maintain and water some of the trees that we'll be planting as well. We always need help with battling invasive species.
Yeah. Yeah. Come and help the goats.
Yeah, exactly.
Come work alongside, shoulder to shoulder with the goats.
Yeah. We actually have a group of volunteers from Iowa State that regularly check on our goat herd that we have at Robison Wildlife Acres. So that's been very helpful.
Have you attracted any waterfowl that are kind of special to you?
When I was working up there last week, I had 14 trumpeter swans fly over. So that was the most I had seen in Iowa. Unfortunately, I was working back in the woodland, and I couldn't see the lake. So I don't know if they landed on the lake or not. But we've had quite a few waterfowl that have been using the lake already.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, very much so. And so describe trumpeter swans in flight.
Big and white. We were actually running chainsaws, and I don't know how, I must have had just a second of silence, and I heard that call that, don't ask me to do it, Pat, but
well,
I heard
that trumpet,
yeah, the sound that they make, and I looked up, and there they were flying over. I almost missed them, so.
But it was the call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the trumpeter swans, what a great resource to attract back to an area that, that might you know, that could possibly be the first trumpeter swans that have been through that area in 150 years. Well, this has been fun.
Yes.
I really like the idea of promoting your need for volunteers. Please keep us in mind when that time comes around. And, especially if there's a grand opening. What a great way to do a little road trip. And
we wouldn't accomplish nearly what we accomplish here at Story County Conservation without our dedicated volunteers. And we rely heavily and appreciate them very much. And if anyone ever wanted to volunteer, you could look for us on our website. Just search for Story County Conservation and contact our volunteer coordinator. Her name is Erica Eves, and she would be glad to find something appropriate that you're interested in doing and matching that with an area where we need help.
And Erica Eves, what a great resource. Just come back to Central Iowa.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have her recently
catch
join
up
our
to
staff.
Erica Eves, your number here.
Story County Conservation Center, the phone number is 515-232-2516.
That's 232-2516. Well, keep up the good work. Thanks for all you do for conservation.
Thank you, Pat.
Amy Yoakum. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. Today we have been discussing birds and bird migration at Ada Hayden Park in North Ames with Tyler Harms, local birder extraordinaire, and Amy Yoakum with the Story County Conservation Board about an exciting project in Northeast Story County at Dakins Lake. Technical assistance has been provided by Rick Morrison. Music you heard was Trip to Duro, Buffalo Creek by the Barn Owl Band from their live recording at the Ames Community Center at City Hall. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And if you're outside our listening area of the Iowa Heartland, there's live streaming of KHOY at our website, khoyfm.org. You can listen to this show and all our past shows online at our website. You will see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. You will also find lists of our guests and contact information to the organizations as we speak with and other resources mentioned on our shows. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, please contact us at 292-2978. 292-2978. Or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. Your participation as audience makes KHOY possible. Please consider the sustaining membership at $250 annually and join the 500 families that will ensure KHOY's strong voice will strengthen the heart of Iowa community we serve from this day forward. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.